Welcome to the podcast. It's Stu in for Glenn today. He is back next week, and I am out next week. So we wanted to go through a few things here from the 4th of July holiday. We talk about the border in today's program and what's going on with the toilet water situation. We talk about Colin Kaepernick and his ridiculous new ability to ban flags from sneakers and his misunderstandings of history with Frederick Douglass. We have a lot of some cool stuff that you can find in our founding documents that have not been seen normally. And also, we need to understand the songs that they play at these 4th of July festivals. They're not pro-American songs. And we get into that a little bit. Also, we talk about a pastor who actually went to these border facilities and saw something a little bit different than people have been reporting on the news. And finally, we talk about, we start the show with the difference between Independence Day, which was yesterday, and I'm naming it Dependence Day. This is because apparently our government wants us to be dependent on them for everything, at least the other 364 days of the year. We get to all of that on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Well, Independence Day is over, and now we've moved on to Dependence Day. Now we can get rid of all that independence, that ugly independence that America wanted for so long, and we can move on to Dependence Day. I don't know if you're looking at the 2020 race at all, but that is essentially what the Democrats are offering right now, is one giant Dependence Day party. They want 364 days of dependence to not be enough. They want to take over July 4th, too, I'm pretty sure. And every single policy they're offering goes down this road. This is, of course, a country, as you may have noted when you were looking at fireworks and eating hot dogs and throwing beer down your gullet, that was kind of founded on the idea that maybe independence is kind of a good idea. These are people, first of all, that came across an ocean and risked everything to form have some sort of option, right? Something different. Lived under what was essentially, it was like the long distance relationship of slavery. They were under the nail of a king. And what did they do? They fought for their independence. They wanted to show that, hey, you know what? Maybe men can do this on their own. Maybe we don't need a king deciding every little bit of our lives for us. Maybe there's a different path here. And as you celebrate Independence Day, you look now at what we're looking at with the 2020 candidates. And I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, there's so many times that you hear the left and right broken down in these ridiculous sort of terms, especially when they talk about the Nazis. They're the right are the Nazis. They're fascists. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said this the other day, and we're moving towards fascism because of what this president is doing. That's an interesting idea because fascists were national socialists. And, you know, National Socialists very clearly, and we went over this in a very extensive article on glennbeck.com that you can check out. National Socialists were not just socialists in name only. They meant it. And of course they meant it, right? You need a large government to be able to control a population. There's nothing consistent with American conservatism that has anything to do with what the Nazis did or any other large government, because what we did here was a limited government. And that is what we argue for all the time. As conservatives, as people who might lean libertarian, you want the smallest government possible because you know what's great is not having to worry about electing the wrong person and having them clamp down in your society. That's a great little option we've discovered here in the United States, or at least had for a very long time. We have limitations on what the government can do to us. Barack Obama famously talked about our founding documents as a charter of negative liberties, and he's right on that. That's exactly what it is. It's a charter to say not what the government must do for you, but what the government can't do to you. You have the right to come out and live your life as you see fit inside of very limited guidelines. a limited government. Conservatives, you know, love the Constitution. We do want a government. We're not anarchists. But what we do look at is maybe limiting the power of the government so that that government isn't making us dependent on it all the time. But today is Dependence Day. You look at what the left is doing right now as we get closer and closer to this election, and somehow they have to come up with some way to paint the economy as poor with 3.7% unemployment. This is not going to be an easy argument for them. You saw this happen in the debates if you were watching them, and I hope you weren't, because it was not fun. I don't know how many of these things I can take, to be honest. I have a very limited capacity for this. It's a very much a nails on a chalkboard situation. But as you kind of go through this and you look at their proposals, you see what they're trying to do. They ask them about, you know, what about the economy? How do you get this to work for everyone? And all of them unanimously said it's not working for people, even though 60% of Democrats say the economy is good. 60% of Democrats say the economy is good right now. How do you fight back against that? Well, the only thing you can do is try to create this utopia, right? You try to come out and figure out a way to tell people that they can't do it on their own. You're not independent, you're dependent. They don't want you to be independent. They want you to be dependent on them, dependent on the government. And why not launch it on July 5th? I think it's the perfect time. They want you to not be responsible. They want them to be responsible. And then, of course, once they're responsible, we know how that ends. We'll get into the news from Venezuela today a little bit later in the program. But when the government runs things and they can control the economy, every aspect of your life, things tend to go down a somewhat dark road. But the left does not want you to be independent. They want you to be dependent on them. They're the only ones that can save you. It's up to you to look to them to solve the problems in your life. Every single day, from the day you're born to the day you die, the government is there to take care of every single need. That is the vision of the left in America right now. And you're seeing it more and more as the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing rises to power. And look, it's not really a separate wing. Instead of calling it the socialist wing, it should just be the honest wing, right? I mean, there's a difference between progressivism and socialism, and it is speed. That's it. It's just speed. You know, like, people are like, oh, well, Joe Biden, he's a moderate. Well, is he? Is Joe Biden a moderate? In what world is Joe Biden a moderate? There are two places where Joe Biden is a moderate: in the 2020 Democratic field and the Soviet Union in 1988. Those are the two moderate places for Joe Biden. The guy was one of when he ran as for vice president, he was the first or second, I think, most liberal senator in the Senate. He's not moderate. This is not a moderate person. Now, granted, Ocasio-Cortez is asking for more today. But think about this. Joe Biden came out in one of his first speeches and said what he wanted was free community college for every single American. That's the moderate position in the Democratic Party. John Delaney's another guy running for president. You don't know that because you've never heard of him. But he's been running since 2017 as a Democrat. He's like, he predates the last election. And he's another moderate who wants to spend $4 trillion on global warming. That's moderate on the left now. Just saying you're against socialism makes you moderate and also gets you booed. That is the world we're looking at right now. We're going to come back and look at some of these proposals here in just 60 seconds, because when you look at where the Democrats really want to go, it is terrifying. It really is. It's a totally different vision of America. And what better day than July 5th to show the sort of black and white, the bright lines between where this country was, how it was founded, and where the left wants to bring it.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast.
So Donald Trump yesterday did something I think was pretty amazing, and I think I've never seen anything like it before, to be honest with you. He had this big 4th of July festival in D.C., and you know, it was talked about quite a bit, and that's not really the part that, you know, I mean, we've seen things like this before. What was amazing to me is Donald Trump somehow got the left to do two things I've never seen it do, because they basically just came out and said the rain that was falling from the sky, that was essentially God being mad at Donald Trump. This is the analysis on social media, and it kind of gets you to two things. Number one, it's the first time they have ever blamed a weather event on something other than global warming, which is pretty cool. That is step number one. And then step number two, they seemingly now believe in God. So Trump pulled off a couple of high hurdles there, and you give him some credit for that. I guess not all patriotism is equal, we're learning. And this is, of course, true. If you go to these festivals over the 4th of July, you have a variance. Sometimes the fireworks, not so good. Sometimes the bands that are there, a little mediocre. Sometimes you kind of wish you were anywhere else. I know on New Year's Eve, I'm always happy to be in bed by like 10 p.m. because I live life like live in a assisted living home. That's kind of like where I want to be in life. People are like, oh, people have to go in these assisted living homes. I'm like, how do I get into one? How old do I have to be? This sounds amazing. Assisted living? Life is hard. I want to be assisted. But I want to be in bed basically as early as possible. So these festivals, you know, I'm not a parade guy. I there's something about parades that are not interesting to me. You know, if you notice what they are, essentially it's just a bunch of people walking down the street. Hey, the cars used to be there, now there's people. That's not dynamic to me. That's not dynamic entertainment. I'd rather go another direction. And then you usually have some singer who tries to do some patriotic song. And, you know, it's not always great. Let's be honest about it. We've seen some of these national anthems get butchered before. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can step into it when you're trying to be patriotic. Most people appreciate the patriotism. You know, unless you're Colin Kaepernick, you kind of like the flag. You kind of like what America stands for. And unless you happen to be on a Democratic debate stage, you don't think the country is entirely evil. So, you know, someone's trying to make an effort at the national anthem, you give them a break, right? You're going to give them a break. But sometimes it does step over that line. I mean, if you go back, you know, a long time in history, here's an American hero, really, an American sports hero, a guy who won a gold medal, you know, in the Olympics, multiple gold medals, Carl Lewis. If you remember this, here's Carl Lewis attempting the national anthem.
All right, are we all ready?
Sure are.
Here we go.
Okay.
Oh.
Okay, all right. It's a little bit pitchy.
Oh, say, can you see? And the rockets, red flag.
Ah.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I'll make up for it now.
Okay. He's going to make keep
here. For the land of the free.
All right. Don't even try it. That's the good thing, by the way. When you're singing these songs and you realize you're not going to do it, don't try that last high note. Go down on it as if that you were making an artistic choice. That's the way to do it. But again, like Carl Lewis, he's an athlete, a great athlete, and really a legitimate American hero at that time. And it was a little bit rough, but okay. That is like the guy. There's a few different ways to screw this up. Number one is guy who can't sing. That person should not get the job in the first place. I blame the arena. Okay, if you can't sing, you shouldn't be out there singing the national anthem. Okay. Then you also have the classic oversing. Now, this comes kind of specifically from a type of person who really can sing, but thinks for some reason the national anthem's about them, so they have to oversing so much and go so crazy with it to, like, I don't know, show their vocal abilities that it just does not work at all. This is Kat DeLuna. Listen to this.
Whose broad stripes and bright stars through whom a perilous fight.
This, again, like, she sounds relatively good. You get into that voice is a little bit overdone. It's like when you're like trying to embarrass your kids and you kind of oversing the song. She kind of sounded like that, except she has some ability, obviously. Then you have the people who just remix it too much. Like, the song is the song, okay? I don't know what they're trying to do by remixing it and changing it up to some ridiculous level where it's almost unrecognizable. I don't know why you do that. It's the national anthem. Sing the song. You know, you really don't need to remix it. Now, you look at the candidates on stage at a debate and you realize maybe they do want to remix what this country is. I don't even know if they want the lyrics to be the same. They want to completely go overboard. But here's R. Kelly, and he decided to go with such a ridiculous remix version of it. It was almost unrecognizable. Listen.
Oh, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed by the twilight's last
gleaming. Okay. I mean, does anyone like that? That's like when you go to concerts and you know, the bands do this all the time. You have a couple different kinds of bands. You have bands where people are really into them and they have this big following and they, you know, people follow them around the country and they sell out tours for decades. Those people go deep into album cuts. They occasionally want a different version of the whatever hit song the band is responsible for. Then you have those bands that have, like, it's like Smash Mouth. If Smash Mouth has, like, you know, two hits, if they come out and do a concert, it, like, you know, with violin and acoustics, like, you're not going to, I mean, you're there for the two, you want All Star. Just sing All Star like All Star was on when you sang the All Star. Do that. That's what you want. And the national anthem, I think, falls into the category of just play the song like the song is. Can we not get that out of these artists? But that's what you have. You have kind of the person who can't sing. Then you have the person who oversings. Then you have the person who remixes. Then you have the person who kind of combines all of this into one version where they're oversinging it. And, you know, they're kind of trying to be too clever. And you question at times whether they can actually sing at all. Here's Fergie from 2018. I mean, she can sing a little bit, right? What is Prue?
That a flag was still there.
Does that star? The NBA players are trying so hard not to laugh. Laughing. Oh, here we go. Big finale.
And the home
of the what?
Brave.
Now, the best part of this one, and this is one that if you didn't see it in video form... Oh, yeah, there we go. Let's play some basketball. The best part about that one is, first of all, the visuals are fantastic in that all the NBA players are trying so hard not to laugh. And I will say the mean cameramen at ESPN who kept pointing the cameras at them, the appropriate thing to do in this moment was to point the cameras at the floor and just hope that no one noticed. But Fergie's trying to belt this thing out, and she is way over singing it, and she's got some bizarre version. And the best part about that is just how much she thinks she's nailed it at the end. She is completely convinced this is like a historic performance of the national anthem that everyone's going to remember. And on that point, she's right. People do remember it. Perhaps for other reasons. That one is rough to watch, but it's rough to hear as well. And then you have the classic. And I don't know why this one still occurs. The words to the national anthem are written down in several places. You can get them on the internet. You can write them down in advance. You can get a teleprompter. You can do all sorts of things to remember the words. And so often people forget the words. Now, this particular version, I will give a little bit of a break to because I think she's Canadian. She's singing at a hockey game. And she's got to belt out both of them because you got to do O Canada at the hockey game as well. And if you think of yourself right now, when we go to commercial next time, take a moment and try to sing O Canada without looking at the lyrics. You're going to kind of know, O Canada, my good and cold land, true or north. You're not going to know the words. You're going to kind of maybe remember it. Maybe you watched a hockey game and you kind of remember them singing it. You went to a Blue Jays game at some point or a Raptors game. It's possible you kind of know the tune. But you give a little bit of a break here. But here is from a hockey game, an attempt at what is known as the U.S. National Anthem.
At the twilight's last gleaming, huh. Whose broad stripes and bright stars... Huh? Through the
Perilous
night.
Okay. Perilous night, yep. Mm-hmm. Or, uh-oh. It's something. The Perilous night, though. Okay, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's a good place to go. Yes, that's part of it. Yes.
And the dawn light still gleaming.
Yeah. There we go. Uh-oh.
The bombs bursting in air.
Ah, got that one.
And the man was still there.
There, yes, that's right.
Oh, say does that star spangled
banner. Come on, get this part. There we go. People know the end. People always know the end. And that's why it's a great song. Because if you can remember any part of it, it's the last couple of lines that you can kind of nail right at the end of it. That, again, she's Canadian. I mean, what does she care? I don't care about O Canada, do you? I mean, I certainly don't. They're fine people. But I don't need to know the words of their songs. I just would like them to be written down if I'm singing it in front of 20,000 people.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So let me start with this. What the hell is going on? Honestly, what is going on? Since when is the Betsy Ross flag controversial? Since when? What the hell is going on? Because Colin Kaepernick, a quarterback who's not even notable for his football ability, is supposedly now dictating what is controversial and what is not. Has anyone ever seen the Betsy Ross flag used in a way that was negative. Used in a way where we're talking about, you know, white nationalists. Has anyone ever seen that? It's a strange thing, if true, because Barack Obama hung it behind himself during his 2013 inauguration after he won against Romney. His big celebration, hey, I'm going to be president for another 4 years. It's going to be fantastic. You're going to love it. By the way, there's Betsy Ross's flag behind me. And now we're supposed to believe that this is some controversial white supremacist symbol? What the hell is going on? Why are we accepting these things? Wait, first of all, people are getting fired because they're giving the okay symbol at the camera. And that's apparently some sort of white supremacy statement. And we're just supposed to accept that as if we just didn't all do the okay thing our entire lives. And now all of a sudden we have to remember not to do it because if you do, that means you're a white supremacist. And now the Betsy Ross flag, if anything, the Betsy Ross flag was more of a sign of American feminism. It's about what an important role that not only white evil men had in our founding, but also women. And now we're supposed to step back and say, oh, well, you know what? That thing's evil. I mean, think about it. Barack Obama in 2013, here we are in 2019, and all of a sudden you're not allowed to use the Betsy Ross flag? What kind of nonsense are we accepting in this country? I mean, seriously. This stuff just happens, and we just kind of sit back and go, wow, that's weird. It's weird how they said this was a great symbol a couple of years ago, and now they're saying the opposite. And it really isn't even a couple of years. How fast has this gone? You have a situation where, yeah, in 2013, Barack Obama talked about it. It's always been a positive symbol for America. But we've gone from, you know what, Colin Kaepernick decided it was not good, immediately to Nike saying, wow, Colin, you're right. Let's pull all these shoes off the shelf and destroy all of them. Then immediately from there to everyone just kind of accepting it. Now we're to the point where candidates are like, yeah, I can't believe it. The Betsy Ross flag, I'm glad that's gone. Listen to Julian Castro talk about the flag again. This is a symbol that was embraced by everybody as of like yesterday. And now because this guy who it wasn't even an accurate passer gets to dictate our national policy on flag etiquette. Here's Julian Castro, who's running for president, if you don't know.
Yeah, well, you know, and I was glad to see that. And
the Nike ban.
My hope is that they didn't just do it to do it, that they understand the significance there.
What significance?
And look, there are a lot of things in our history that are still very painful.
Sure, there are, but why is that
one? The Confederate flag that still flies in some places.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And is used as a symbol.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that we need to move toward an inclusive America.
Inclusive.
That understands that pain, mm-hmm. that doesn't wipe it away from history in the sense that it still belongs in a museum or we need to read about it and understand the significance.
Wait, what?
Because that's how you learn and make sure that we don't make the same mistakes in the future, mm-hmm. but does not glorify it, does not celebrate it.
We don't celebrate the Betsy Ross. This is Julian Castro. This is a man who served in Obama's cabinet. He was the HUD secretary. This guy is saying, I guess his former boss, who was black, is a racist. What hurtful history is there of the Betsy Ross flag? The fact that we point out that there were American heroes of this founding of our history that were women? This is supposed to be a positive thing. And it was a positive thing until Colin Kaepernick was able to derail it. And now what you're going to have is make it a self-fulfilling prophecy because the trolls who are on the alt-right or white supremacists or whatever are going to start using it. And then it really will need to be in a museum, at least according to them. No one wants to fight for these things anymore. No one wants the tough battle. No one wants the tough road. No one wants to have to say, well, I disagree with Colin Kaepernick. I don't know, has anyone noticed? He's a moron. Nobody wants, Nike can't do that. They can come and tell us how evil we are. They can tell half of America how terrible they are, how terrible their policies are. corporate responsibility, blah, blah, blah. They certainly have their own set of problems, as we've seen over the years. But we went from, hey, this is totally fine, to Colin Kaepernick saying it's no longer fine, to now Nike saying, of course it's no longer fine, to people who are running for president saying, thank God, hopefully someday soon that will just be in a museum so we know about our evil, dark history. What evil, dark history when it comes to this flag? It has never symbolized anything of the sort. And I think one of the things, and Charles C.W. Cook does a good job pointing this out for National Review, it's not just how fast this has happened. It's that there hasn't even been an argument as to why it's happened. There isn't even the thing where you're saying, well, we think this, represented a time where things were bad, and that's why we now think it's bad. I can't even come up with one. We talk about this all the time. It's like if someone dies, you don't want to just tell them they're dead. It's like, what's up, brother? Sorry, mom's dead. You don't break it to them like that. You say, hey, look, mom's sick. Hold on, I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Ah, she's dead. You have to have some level of escalation there. Bring people along on the argument. This has been instantaneous. Beto O'Rourke. Now, look, no one's going to Beto O'Rourke for his intellect, but he said, I think it's really important to take into account the impression that kind of symbol would have for many of our fellow Americans. Respect the decision Nike made. I respect the decision Nike made, and I'm grateful for the conversation. I think it's really important to take into account the impression that that kind of symbol would have. There's no impression there. People's impression of the Betsy Ross flag is it was an American symbol. If they knew anything about it, they said it's a way to honor women from our early years. That's it. And now all of a sudden, it's completely crazy to have that flag flying. Here's Frederica Wilson. Let me go to, sorry, the wrong one here. Let's go to Michael Eric Dyson. Michael Eric Dyson talking about this. Listen.
The left is responding. They're saying this flag is problematic. They're giving their interpretation. It's similar to what the Confederacy has done. They lost the war, but they won the battle of interpretation. This is waging a war of interpretation on the landscape of American popular culture for the collective mindset of America. And people have their right to weigh in as they choose. But the reality is that this flag has represented something that if people want to reclaim it, then do so. It's like the argument about the statues. The statues are there for education. I don't hear people talking about Robert E. Lee as a moment of educating us about the viciousness of white supremacy. So were that to occur, it would be great. It just hasn't happened.
What about the argument that some have made, this is PC culture run amok, if you will? If Nike wants to put this flag on their shoe, why are people so upset about it?
Yeah, because, words matter, symbols matter, too. Why don't we wear a swastika for July 4th?
Great point.
I don't know. It makes a difference.
Great point.
The cross burning on somebody's lawn. Why don't we just have a Nike, celebration of the cross? Well, because those symbols are symbols of hate. So we can take PC culture back. It's amazing to me that people who cry the loudest about PC are the ones who didn't show up when the offense first occurred, who didn't defend the people who were victims of white supremacy or racism or sexism or misogyny, but now pop up and say, hey, let's not be too PC. If you ain't
all right,
I
can't take anymore. I can't take anymore. Look, this is, first of all, the Confederacy won the battle of symbolism. We can't even air episodes of the Dukes of Hazzard anymore. What are you talking about? Confederacy did not win the messaging battle. That was not something that occurred. Where are these people coming from? And the idea that you're going to compare the Betsy Ross flag to the swastika and burning crosses. We are at a point where people aren't even trying to make sense. There is not even the outside effort to attempt to try to make a logical argument anymore. It's just spouting words. This is only an insane civilization would allow someone like Colin Kaepernick to dictate what its standards are. And we are part, apparently, of that insane civilization now. I'm not. I hope you're not either, because I can't take it. 888-727-BECK is our phone number. We're back with more about our history. And this part of our history is fascinating, because we are now trying to remake yet another historical figure into something they were not. Back in a second. The world has gone completely insane. Colin Kaepernick tweets this to celebrate the 4th of July. He says, quote, "What have I, or those I represent, to do with your national independence? This 4th of July is yours, not mine. There's not a nation on the earth guilty of practices more shocking and bloody than are the people of the United States at this very hour." That's from Frederick Douglass, and a powerful moment from Colin Kaepernick, who has, I would say, even less knowledge of our history than he had of opposing defenses. That is a statement and a half. What else did Frederick Douglass say in this exact speech he's quoting from? He said, quote, "Allow me to say in conclusion, notwithstanding the dark picture I have to this day presented of the state of the nation, I do not despair of this country. There are forces in operation which must inevitably work the downfall of slavery. The arm of the Lord is not shortened, and the doom of slavery is certain. I therefore leave off where I began with hope, while drawing encouragement from the Declaration of Independence, the great principles it contains, and the genius of American institutions." Doesn't sound like Colin Kaepernick anymore, does it? "My spirit is also cheered by the obvious tendencies of the age." If you go and read the entire thing, it's pretty amazing. Frederick Douglass also went on to say, "Now take the Constitution, according to its plain reading, and I defy the presentation of a single pro-slavery clause in it. On the other hand, it will be found to contain principles and purposes entirely hostile to the existence of slavery." It's kind of a big deal, a little different than what Colin Kaepernick would say, but again, we've given him now the power to apparently ban the flag from shoes, and we're seeing this all over the country. Taking things that were one way, we all understood and agreed they were one way, and now just reworking them. If it's not postmodernism, it's something very close to it. In Charlottesville, they're now no longer going to celebrate Thomas Jefferson's birthday as an official city holiday, and will instead observe a day recognizing the emancipation of enslaved African Americans. City Council voted to scrap the decades-old April 13th holiday honoring the slave-holding president, as the way the article is written, the slave-holding president and founding father. Charlottesville will now mark Liberation and Freedom Day on March 3rd, the day U.S. Army forces arrived in the city in 1865. Again, we've talked about this before, and if you want to see this document, and it's one of the original engravings of it, for reals, like in person kind of thing, you can come here to Texas and view it as part of the Mercury Museum that's going on right now, 12 score and 3 years ago. It's going on all weekend. If you happen to be in Texas, you can make it down. You still got a few days to see it. There's still some tickets available for this weekend. You can go to mercury1.org, mercury1.org, because you can come here and see the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. And if you see it, it's more powerful than hearing it, because you can see what was prioritized by Jefferson. He wrote things in big capital letters. You can see his handwriting change in the actual document. And if you don't know the story, the first draft of the Declaration of Independence, written by Jefferson, it was not approved. They had to have it to be unanimous. There's two states, I believe it was, two states that opposed this language. And this language is completely anti-slavery. There's a lot of weird restrictions and some personal failings by some of our founders, including Jefferson, on some of the stuff. There's also some legal restrictions as to why he held slaves and could not release them after he died, blah, blah, blah. Probably heard all of those arguments before, but you may not have heard this because this one is one never gets any press. But you can come here and see the actual document. Here's what he wrote. He's talking about the king, and he's like, "Hey, you know what? This king kind of sucks, and I'm not a big fan of him. And I think we should, like, break away and do our own thing." And he says a bunch of other reasons. "Hey, you know, he's screwed us over in this many ways." As Glenn's described it before, it's one of the best breakup letters you'll ever read. But he says this about the king, Jefferson. This is, again, this guy that is now losing holidays, we're told is evil. He says, "The king has waged cruel war against human nature itself, violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the pursuits of a distant people who never offended him. Who is that distant people? Well, they're slaves. He's talking about how bad it is, a violation of human nature, that he went and took slaves, people who never offended him in a distant land, captivating and carrying them into slavery, so you know I'm not lying, into slavery in another hemisphere. They took them across the world, or to incur miserable death in their transportation. So not only were they going to be slaves, but the accommodation sucked. And Jefferson was pissed off about that. This warfare is the warfare of the Christian king of Great Britain. And Christian is capitalized to, in case you're a moron, and there's a lot of people who are on Twitter that are morons and can't detect sarcasm. He's not praising him as a Christian king. He's saying, this guy's Christian? Really? Is he? Because he's not doing a lot of Christian stuff. He says he's Christian, but he's imprisoning people, taking them, killing half of them as they come across the ocean, and then enslaving them in the United States. That's cool. In fact, it wasn't really the United States at that point, but you understand what I'm saying. He was determined, the king, again, as Jefferson writes, the king was determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. Does this guy seem like he's pro-slavery? And again, men is capitalized. Men is emphasized. Why? Because he was telling you, men, slaves were men. They weren't just property. He wants to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold. He has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this commerce. He is saying there, the king's tried to stop us. We've tried to pass laws to stop slavery, and the king overrules us. That's wrong, and that's one of the reasons why we want to become independent. And now he's exciting those very people to rise in arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them, paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with crimes he urges them to commit against the lives of another. TJ was not an enthusiastic slave guy, okay? It's pretty clear by his writings, and the fact that he was stopped by other states is part of history. It's a horrible part of history. The fact that slavery existed in this country sucks. But you can get the real facts about it, what really happened, who are the real heroes, at the Mercury One Museum. Again, it's mercuryone.org, mercuryone.org.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
It's Stu in for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. Glenn will be back on Monday. He's out for actually recovering from surgery to reroute his esophagus to a garbage can to lose some weight. So that's going on now, but he should be back and healthy and ready to go on Monday. We're talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her detention facility comments at the southern border. What's going on there? What's actually occurring? And she's now saying that we're headed to fascism. She says, are we headed to fascism? Yes. I don't think there's a question. So she's not, I mean, it's not even like, it's not a borderline situation. We're on our way. Now, I do remember every time Glenn says the word fascism or Nazi or concentration camp or Germany or like Europe. Or, I mean, any of these things we get, you know, he would get beat up by every group in the world that says you're not allowed to talk about these things. These are specific. You can't bring politics into this, and you should never use this sort of imagery. But no, she's saying we are headed to fascism, and that's apparently okay. She's saying they are concentration camps, and that's apparently okay. And here's the thing, and I don't want to overstate this because you're in a what I'm thinking is a little bit black and white. So I don't want to overstate my case here. So let me just be very careful. Literally no one in the universe believes what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is saying. Zero people. By the way, that includes Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. No one believes the things she is saying. She's saying them because she expects people to kind of just go along and not question it. And look, there is, of course, an element of truth here. This is a difficult situation. There's a lot of people in areas that they would rather not be. Everyone wants to live in a mansion, and they're not living in mansions. You know, I mean, it sucks. They lived in a country that was so crappy, they decided they had to risk their lives to leave it. At this point, knowing they were going to end up in an overcrowded, under-resourced facility. Imagine that decision. It's not an easy day. And no one's saying it is. So, of course, there's some element of truth that the circumstances are not the best. However, where she's going, trying to make it seem like, I mean, the idea that she was sexually abused while walking through a facility with other congresspeople is the most asinine thing anyone has ever stated. It's ridiculous. We all know it's ridiculous. The people writing about it in the media know it's ridiculous, and it did not occur. But I guess we're supposed to act as if this is serious. Luckily, there are other people who have gone to these facilities and looked at them. People with actual credibility. And they have reported things that are a little bit different than what you're hearing from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the rest of the media. Joining me is Dan Andros. He is at faithwire.com. And Dan, you guys actually talked to people who went to the facility that maybe didn't have a political axe to grind. Kind of a different way of looking at this story you guys did on FaithWire.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And first of all, Stu, thoughts and prayers to Glenn. That surgery sounds really difficult.
Thoughts and prayers. Although I will say, I'm in line to get the surgery. As I was describing the surgery, I thought I need to get the surgery that I reroute the esophagus to a garbage can, because that would be something that would improve my life.
There you go. So a few pastors actually that we have spoken to happen to have toured the same facility that AOC had gone to and came away. They actually had gone before she went. So this wasn't like they went afterwards to go and, you know, get a different story and throw something out there. Mm-hmm. But Reverend Samuel Rodriguez went, and he had gone with a delegation of Hispanic pastors. And he told us that he was totally baffled by the reports from AOC and others who saw what they saw. He said that he saw no, you know, soiled diapers, no deplorable conditions, no lack of basic necessities. Now, he went on to say that it was like a summer camp. I don't know that it's that good, but I think the media just sort of took that quote. I think he was trying to just say that it wasn't the torturous situation that AOC was describing. Another pastor, Gilberto Corredera, he also went there, and he had an interesting thing here, and this is where I wanted to focus in on, Stu. He said that the border agents actually have good relationships with the families and the children there, and they often spend their own money to buy food and water for them because, and this is the reason why these pastors are involved in the first place, is because of the lack of resources and funding right now, you know, dedicated to this situation, because there's an influx. This is way more than they're normally used to dealing with. And again, AOC actually voted against that funding that was recently put up because she wanted to make a statement. So, mm-hmm. So she voted against that. But so to me, that's like, okay, we've got two competing narratives here. On the one hand, you have these pastors saying that the border agents actually care and they generally feel bad for the people in this situation that, as you said, they're coming from such horrible situations that they know they may not even have a chance to get in. They're willing to risk the lives of their children and themselves to try to get here. That's how bad it is. So, of course, we have compassion on them for that situation, but that doesn't mean we can just let everybody in. And since we don't have the resources, they're actually spending their own money. Now, listen, I mean, compare that to what AOC is saying, and she's describing, she's gone out there and has tweeted that these are like concentration camps. Now, when you go down that road, she can do one of two things. She can either apologize and say that she just feels so bad for, you know, that she didn't mean to use that language. She just felt bad for the people in that situation. Mm-hmm. Or she could do everything she can to double down and prove that her theory about these being intentionally harmful concentration camps is true. And so what she's basing that tweet on, Stu, that the one, and I'm going to read the tweet because it's really interesting. She said, "I just left the first CPB facility. I see why those officers were being so physically and sexually threatening towards me. Their officers are keeping women in cells with no water and had to tell them to drink out of toilets. This was them on their good behavior in front of members of Congress. Now, it's interesting the way she worded that, because she didn't see the sexually threatening towards me thing is not from – she's not saying that that – at least my understanding is she's not saying that that happened while she was at the facility. She's saying that this happened in these secret Facebook groups that were Border Patrol. Now, what do those things come from, and what are those? So that came from a report, interestingly, that was dropped about 20 minutes before she tweeted about it.
Yes.
From ProPublica, which is a left-leaning – one of these left-leaning fact checkers. You know, they masquerade as independent, but they're really – you know, have a liberal-leaning bias. And so the timing of that's interesting, because here she is on a tour – right? And she's learning of all these horrific details, and yet she can tweet this random story that she just happened to find. So it sure seems like she at least knew about it, or maybe there was possibly some coordination there on the release of that. But these Facebook groups, let's look at those, because the media has run with that. They've run with the memes that are in there, and they're obviously these insensitive memes and, you know, locker room talk kind of stuff.
Right, and I'm fascinated by this part of it, because, I mean, they act as if finding people who say things online about public figures is some breaking news event. It's like, well, right. People are jerks, right? Like, yes, people say bad things. We don't know who these people are. Part of the reason why they do it on the internet is because there's anonymity. So we don't know who they are. We don't know if they're actually border guards or not. And I was fascinated by the after Ocasio-Cortez came out and she was talking to the media afterwards, she said, you know, I've seen all these things. All these negative things is written about me, and I'm not going to stop speaking truth to power. And it's like, well, you're power. You realize that. Like, you're a congressperson now. You're not just some random, you know, bartender anymore. You are the you are the type of person that gets truth spoken to. It's not supposed to be the other way around at this point. And she acts as if, like, this – she wants to shut down – I mean, we played a clip earlier, Dan, of one congresswoman actually calling for the prosecution – of people on this Facebook group for the things that they're saying about Ocasio-Cortez. This is out of control.
Right. If you think about the absurd, if you slow down and you, I mean, there's really two different worlds here, Stu. We have Twitter world and regular world. Now, in regular world, the things that they're reacting to are utterly absurd. To suggest that we should prosecute people for creating stupid memes is one of the most ridiculous ideas I've ever heard in my entire life. Because first of all, then pretty much everybody would get shut down, because everybody has created a meme at some point or another that has made fun of somebody. That's pretty much the whole entire point of memes.
It's the internet. So, it's the entire point of the internet.
On defeating and prosecuting memes, God bless you. Go for that. I don't think it's the best idea out there. But these secret groups, I mean, AOC has really just become great at building up straw men and tearing them down. I mean, CNN reported this breathlessly, of course, you know, that all of these insensitive memes were happening, and then kind of mentioned at the bottom of the article that, well, we weren't able to independently verify if any of the people in this secret Facebook group are actually anything to do with CPB at all. Think about this, Stu, a secret Facebook group. Mm-hmm. What is a secret Facebook group? It is a closed Facebook group that literally anyone in the world can create. Mm-hmm. They make it sound like it's some secret society that has been deviously conceived by Border Patrol. No. And some random person just created a Facebook group and called it that. We have no idea who. It could be a 13-year-old in their basement. We have no idea who this is. And yet this is lead news across the mainstream media. That's the sorry state that we're in today.
It really is incredible. And I will say that Ocasio-Cortez, after this, because she was asked about the abuse that she had in the facility, and she did mention the Facebook group, which is, you know, ridiculous. Another thing that she actually mentioned as well, though, was selfies. She was a victim of selfie abuse. Now, selfie abuse, what? If you're not familiar with this, I mean, you're going to be horrified. She said that people were agents were taking photos of themselves smiling with her in the background. And if that's not abuse, I just don't know what is. I mean, I don't know how we're allowing this to go on. I mean, this is
she's literally saying that that's abuse, that someone wanted to get a picture with her in the background because she's a famous person.
And yes, because they were, when they're, you know, she's basically saying that they were mocking her. She said she was upset about the quote stealth selfie that was being taken. She went around in her and you know, the border agents are like, she was basically harassing us, but you know, what are we going to do? She's in Congress. Like, but we wanted to tell her to stop, but you know, we didn't know what we were supposed to do. And that goes back again to speaking truth to power. Like, that is, she acts as if she's this person who's like uncovering all of these things. First of all, when we talk about the secret Facebook group, someone got the password to a group that anyone can post. And secret groups are not secret. They're just private. So you can't see the post unless you get the password. Well, someone got an invite. Somebody got an invite or leaked it to ProPublica. Who knows who this is? We don't know who it is. But
could be ProPublica for all we know. There was like 1,000 people in it.
It's true. Yes, it was. I think it was 9,500 people. Less than 10,000 people are in it. And we don't know. Again, maybe it did start with actual border guards. You know, they only give about 5 or 6 examples in the story, at least that I read from ProPublica. And they were like rude. And they were, you know, like, do I love the idea that in our society this stuff's going on? No. But it was not the end. I mean, it was not threatening. It was not death threats or anything close to that. The biggest threat in there, as we were talking about earlier, was one of the people on the one of the commenters under the story. So someone posts a story, one commenter on the story, a commenter wrote that someone should throw a burrito at her, which, again, well, yeah, I think could be delicious.
A comment of well, yes, exactly. And I mean, and that's honestly, that's minimal abuse from what is typical on Facebook. I mean, look at what conservative women get on Facebook.
Oh, my God. Facebook. Dana Lash. Oh, my God. The things that have been said about her and her family. Not even close.
All this is, too, is all this is pushing a narrative. And when you have to go to a secret Facebook group to sort of build up these images of what's actually happening there, to validate your theory that these are concentration camps. Mm. I mean, I think it's time that people need to pull back here a little bit and use some common sense. Okay. The truth is probably somewhere in the middle. Are these happy, fun daycares? Probably not, but that's not what they're designed to be.
No.
You know, when you come over across the border illegally, you're not supposed to get a stay at the Ritz-Carlton or at...
You know, why not? You know what? I think it's in the Constitution, Dan. The Ritz-Carlton is in the Constitution. If you look on the back of it, you'll see it there. I got to go, Dan. We're running out of time. Yep. I want to point people, though, to faithwire.com because you have on the front page these interviews, including the interview about how the border agents have been actually buying and using their own money for goods and services here for these immigrants. This is a something you're not getting from the mainstream media. You can check it out at faithwire.com. Dan, thanks for coming on.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.